want to welcome everybody to this week's episode of In the Rough with JB and Golfer Gal. I'm your host, JB, and Golfer Gal is out sick this week, but we found a suitable replacement. We have Steve from Golf Tech with us again, and we have a very special show where he took questions that we put up on the THP forum from the readers, and we are going to get to as many of those as we possibly can. So, Steve, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks, Josh. Great to be back on.
Absolutely. You know, we love our partnership with Golf Tech, and we think our readers and forum members get to experience something that many don't always get, which is to have direct access to coaches that can assist them with questions such as these.
Well, yeah, I could tell just looking through the forum postings and the questions, you've got a group of people out there who have some great questions, and they're trying to understand the right things, and hopefully we can get them some help with what they need.
Well, that's exactly what our goal is, and I want to get right to the questions because we have a lot of them, and they cover everything in the world of golf, and as people know, when you start answering the questions, I start rambling, and we go from there. The first question was really intriguing to me because we asked people, it can be about lessons, fitting, equipment, anything, and we're kind of putting you on the spot here, so we know these aren't rehearsed. But the first question is, a lot of the new drivers are super long. It seems a lot of people are more comfortable with drivers that are 44 and 45 inches instead of around 46. What effect does it have on a driver if you cut it down an inch or two? Is it okay to do this yourself, or should the work be done by a company to make sure the swing weight is right?
Yep, that was a really good question. And I, first and foremost, from a golf swing perspective and a improvement perspective, I tend to agree with the initial thought that a lot of the new drivers are very long and actually too long for most people, because when you have a swing that doesn't work quite right, and we know that the majority of golfers in the world swing over the top and hit slices, a longer club can actually hurt that golf swing. And so, you know, most people think, and I think the reason why the manufacturers have done this and gone longer and longer and longer, is that most golfers think, well, hey, if I get this super light club that's longer, it'll go faster because of the length of the shaft. But what tends to happen is you can actually lose energy when you have a club that's too long if you throw it over the top and you early release, which is a lot of the golfers. So when you want to go longer with the club, one of the things is you have to have a swing that's on plane, and you have to have a good strong transition and a good strong lag angle to be able to utilize that length. So first and foremost, I'd say I think it is typically safer for the average golfer to stay shorter. And I love a 44-inch driver length personally. But beyond that, when you look at the actual equipment ramifications, if you do take one of these light clubs and cut it down, you will mess with the swing rate, swing weight quite a bit. So the second part of that answer would be, I would definitely have it professionally done, either with the manufacturer or with a really well-known, reputable club maker in your area, so that they do get the swing weight right. Because as you cut down the shaft of the club, you will tend to lose swing weight, and it's going to affect the feel of the club and the way that it plays. So I would always suggest, if you're going to cut a club down, have it done right. And you can add swing weight back in a number of ways. Obviously, somebody like a TaylorMade with the R11s and R9s over the last few years and the movable weights, that's a really easy way to do it, and I do like that. But at the same time, you can change swing weight with grips, so you can get a really lightweight grip like the Wind Super Lights. Those will add 5 swing weights to the head of the driver just because the grip is lighter. So there are ways to do the math to get it back to a decent swing weight when you cut it down, if you go that route.
Well, that is a very insightful answer. Me personally, it's kind of funny. I'm the exact opposite. As I've gotten longer, I've actually gotten straighter. But I know that it's not the same for everybody, and I think that goes to show how important fitting is.
Without question, the fitting component of what we do in golf is very, very important.
Now, with these questions, I should warn everybody, we're jumping around like crazy. We're all over the gamut here, from drills to equipment to fitting and everything else. So I just want to warn people, if there doesn't sound like there's a real flow, that's the reason. The next question we have is, it says, I've always been flippy, quote-unquote, at impact, and have always relied on my timing. What is a good drill for clearing my hips and swinging through the ball without rolling my wrists over the top?
Another very common thing that we see in golf instruction, I would guess that I would say 85%+ of the clients that we teach flip at impact and don't lean the shaft of the club forward correctly as they hit the ball. Now, typically, that comes from a few different cause and effect relationships within the swing. So when I see those types of issues, I start with a few different things. I look very closely at the golfer's grip. A lot of times the grip is too weak, meaning right hand turned to the right too far, right hand turned to the left too far, and left hand turned to the left or under the club too far. And so that causes the face of the club to be a little open as they swing back, and therefore they flip or use the hands too much through the golf ball to square it back up. So one of the things I always try to do is make sure that they've got a very neutral to maybe even a slightly strong grip, because when you go a little stronger with that left hand grip, it forces you to have to take the hands out of it a little bit at impact and turn the body through more. So that's one key piece. The next thing would be making sure that we've got a body that's capable of turning. So a real simple little drill to do would be to get in your golf posture, cross your arms across your shoulders so you're kind of holding the shoulders very, very still, and just see how far you can twist your hips back and forth, like turning them out toward the target and then turning them back away from the target without moving the shoulders. And if you find that you have trouble doing that, then it might be that we need to go see somebody, a little physical therapist or somebody who can get us stretched out and get that core and that lumbar spine a little bit more flexible so that you have the ability to turn the hips without moving the shoulders too far. But once we've gotten those two things sorted out and you've got a good stable grip, you've got a body that's capable of turning, one of my favorite drills is one we call the three-step hip drill. So what you do is you simply set up to the ball. The first step is to twist your hips out toward the target as far as you can. You can even let the right heel come up off the ground a little bit to allow the hips to turn, and you keep your head behind the ball, and you lean the shaft of the club forward a little bit. So what you're doing is you're pre-setting the impact position and learning what it feels like to have those hips turned out toward the target as you strike the ball. Real simple fact here for the listeners, when we've measured the tour players, their hips average 42 degrees open to the target at impact. And the average amateur that we measure is about 23 degrees open. So the tour players definitely do use those hips a lot more through the ball. It's where they get a lot of their power. It's where they really, use the body to drive the golf ball. So we go back here to step one. We preset the impact position. Then you come back to address. You make a little short backswing, just right around waist high, and you come back down to the ball, feeling those hips pull you through and turning them out to the target again, kind of setting the golf club right back behind the ball as if you're making a little downswing coming into impact with those hips leading you. And then you go back to address again, and you hit a shot, and you make a swing trying to feel those hips leading the downswing. So, the whole drill probably takes, 30 seconds. Step one, you clear them out. You go back to address. You make a little short backswing. You clear them out, and then you go back to address, and then you hit a shot. And it sort of builds up and presets that feeling of letting the hips pull you through that golf shot. It's a really good one for taking the hands out of it and learning to use the hips better through the shot.
That is very insightful and something that I'm actually visualizing doing when we get off the air. Next question, it says, I'd be interested in whether they have any tips, meaning you, on establishing pointers to ensure you're swinging at a correct tempo. And tempo is something we discuss a lot on the THP forum. I find that when I'm playing poorly, it's typically because I'm swinging too fast. At least that's what people tell me that when they watch. Yet to me, it feels just about right. Having some checks in place to make sure I've got that tempo would be incredibly useful.
Okay, this is a good question. Now, there's one distinction you have to make when talking about tempo with people, because there are really good players who swing at a very quick tempo, and there are really good players who swing at a very long, slow tempo. So I always think of, let's say, a Nick Price. Back when he was really tearing it up in the mid-90s, I mean, he had a very quick golf swing, but it wasn't hard, meaning he didn't swing with a lot of aggression or effort. So to me, when some people say, oh, I'm swinging too fast, I think they a lot of times mean that they're swinging too hard and they're not making that distinction, that it's not how long it's taking you to make your golf swing, it's how hard you're making your golf swing, which is a big issue.
It's so funny that you mentioned Nick Price, because to keep that on plane, I learned that Nick Price and Fred Couples played virtually the same shaft stiffness. And if you watch the two of them swing, you would never guess that their swing speed and shaft flex needed was similar.
Absolutely. That's a great point, right? Freddie's got the long, slow, smooth swing. You look at think of the Payne Stewarts back in the, you know, and Nick is a much quicker tempoed person. But yet they still move the golf club at the same type of speed. They probably have slightly different load characteristics right as they transition. But in general, those tour players all move at about the same speed, and they're going to need a similar type of shaft. So once you get that understood, that, you know what, I can have a little bit quicker tempo and still be a good player, or I can have a slower tempo and be a good player. The thing that you have to learn is how much effort or how much aggression is needed as you swing. And getting back to the tempo piece for a second, the average for the tour players we've measured is about 1.1 seconds. So if you can have some type of a little timing device, some of the little sensor mats you can hit over nowadays, you can pick up at you know, a Golfsmith or a place like that for reasonable money. They can tell you how long it's taking your golf swing to happen. But I would say about 1 second up to about 1.2 or 3 tends to be a pretty good tempo for the swing itself. But the aggression is where we've learned a lot. And what I see with you know, vast majority of golfers is that they're swinging too hard or too aggressively at the ball. And so there was some neat research done by Rick Martino when he was the head of the PGA Learning Center down in Port St. Lucie. And they did a study on people. And they asked them, how much effort are you putting into your backswing, 1 to 10 scale, and how much effort into your downswing on a 1 to 10 scale? And the average was about a 7 going back and about a 9 coming through. So to that, to me, that's 90% of your full amount of effort through the ball was what the average golfer said. And what they did was they had people start dropping that number until they started to see the shots improve and see what the best quality of golf shot was. And the best ones happened at a 3 going back and a 4 coming through. So 40% of your total amount of effort resulted in the shots that went the farthest and the straightest. So to me, I use that data a lot to help people. And I've been in our centers recently talking to some of our clients. I had a guy the other day was swinging so hard. He had a pretty good swing fundamentally, but his contact was suffering because he was swinging so hard. And I said, how hard are you swinging through that ball, you know, 1 to 10 scale? And he flat out told me, he said, oh, 10. Like, just once he gets to the top of the swing, he's ripping through it as hard as he possibly can. And I think that's where the average golfer could really benefit from understanding how hard you really do need to swing to hit the ball far and straight. And if you say 30 to 50%, let's say, of your effort, that's a great starting point. And then let your own personal tempo guide you. I mean, some people are a little quicker paced and some people are a little slower. You should know that about yourself just by how you walk around every day. How do you talk? Are you a little bit slower paced? That's what you want to do for the timing of the swing, like how long it takes. But the amount of effort, almost every golfer can benefit from swinging easier or using a lower percentage of their total effort.
That kind of leads into the next question in a way, and that is about having a teacher. The question says, how do you know if you need a lesson or not? How often should you take lessons? As needed or a set schedule? How do you know if a lesson or coach is not working for you? You know, these questions, obviously there's a lot of questions in there, but really it comes down to the fact of how do you know when you need a lesson and what can you expect out of them?
Yep. The how do you know if you need a lesson question, to me, you know, there's so much golf information out there in the magazines, and they're very well-meaning. I mean, you know, golf, we do a lot of stuff with Golf Magazine and Golf Digest, and they're great guys, and they're trying to do what's right for people. You know, they're not writing things just to sell magazines. They're writing things to try to help people play better golf. But what ultimately happens is, you know, golfers don't have the same issues all the time. So, you know, you read one thing and you go, oh, I'm going to go try that. And next thing you know, it doesn't work, or sometimes it does work. And what people need to understand is when you are trying to self-correct and help yourself out and it's not working, meaning you're not reaching your goals, you could probably use some help. And it happens in other things that we do in life, right? In fitness, you've been working out and you're thinking, man, I should be getting fit and seeing some abs right about now. And it's just, I'm not getting there. I must be doing something wrong. I need to go see a fitness trainer and somebody's got to help me. And then they tell you a few new things and you go, wow, I never tried that, or I didn't think that was what I was supposed to be doing. And you try it and it starts to work and things happen better. So to me, it's when you're trying to fix yourself and you can't quite figure out why nothing's changing or why it's not getting better. To me, that's a great time to say, you know what, I think I could use a little help with this whole deal and maybe I'm missing something, and go take a lesson. And then when you get there, you know, to me, if you have a coach who is not using video, first and foremost, I think I would start looking elsewhere right away. I think technology has helped us in so many parts of our lives, and it is really beneficial for golf when you can slow down that swing. And, you know, when you asked the question a few minutes ago about flipping, well, I can tell you, even with an eye that's seen tens of 20s of thousands of golf swings on our system with motion measurement data and high-speed video and everything else, when I watch a player who's got a pretty decent-looking swing, but they flip at impact, it is very hard to see that at full speed. So if you're watching a guy on the range and they're flipping it, sometimes that is not easy to see. And you can't really understand the cause and effect relationships that are making them do that. So having somebody that uses video that can slow your swing down and see what some of these flaws are is one thing right away that would let me know if a coach is right for you or not. And then how do they motivate you and how do they communicate to you? If they're saying things that make sense to you and you go, okay, you know what, when he explains it this way or he demonstrates it, I get it and I understand why he's having me do it or she's having me do it, and I see the benefit of what we're talking about, to me that's a good coach, because they can take a very complex movement, which there is a lot going on in a golf swing, and bring it down to the bare bolts of what you need and communicate it to you in a way that you say, okay, I get that. I can go work on that. That, to me, is a good coach. If they're confusing you a little bit or using terminology that's going over your head, they're not seeing that you're not getting what needs to be understood. And so if they're a little confusing or maybe giving you two or three different things to work on every time, which to me is a lot to try to integrate into your golf swing in one session, I would maybe think about looking elsewhere.
Well, and I should point out that if you even ask yourself the question of, do I need a lesson, you probably should get one. That's not a knock on a skill level. It just means that I'm a firm believer in lessons no matter what somebody's skill level is. There's always something to help you out. A golf coach, you know, a good golf coach is not there to rebuild your swing and to break everything down every time. It's there to help you get to a certain point, depending on your goals. So I always think there's a reason to get a lesson.
Couldn't agree with you more.
The next question I have, or that a reader had, is what can a good fitting provide to the golf game, and what can't a fitting fix?
The fitting, if you, I guess there's kind of an important point to make, is if you are a golfer who has clubs that are poorly fit for you, meaning, you know, let's say the average Joe goes out there and he grabs a driver off the shelf, and, you know, we've seen it so many times over the years here that we just know the tendencies of golfers would be to grab a club that's too stiff and doesn't have enough loft, let's say, for the driver. And now they're out there playing a club that's not fit very well for them, but we're very adaptable beings. And so what do? You learn how to kind of use that new driver that you just bought that you were so proud of. So you play the ball back in the stance a little bit and you learn to flip. Like when you talk about the flip at impact, well, there's one of your cause and effects. If the ball position's too far back, people will naturally flip to learn to get the ball up in the air. So when clubs are very ill fit for a person, a fitting can do wonders. I mean, the golf swing can start to take shape the right way. Their improvement goes up dramatically. The distances can go up dramatically because now all of a sudden the equipment is working for you and not against you almost. When you have a golfer who's got something that's fairly close, a fitting will not magically you know, take your game to a whole nother level. It just, they simply don't do that. I'm a huge believer in the power of mechanics and a good golf swing, and I know that, you know, I was very fortunate last week to go up to the RBC Canadian Open, and we got to use our system to measure Ernie Els and Luke Donald and Anthony Kim and Matt Kuchar and Jim Furyk. I mean, some of the top players in the world, and I can tell you with 100% certainty that Ernie Els could pick up my clubs or your clubs, Josh, or my grandmother's clubs and hit great shots. And, you know, with my grandma's clubs, they're probably not going to – his shots are going to do something a little different, but he'll see that, and after about four or five swings, he'll make the ball do the same exact thing with those clubs every time. So working on your golf swing and building your mechanics and working hard to build a good swing that'll be repeatable will help every time. And then a fitting can sort of put you in a position where that nice golf swing that you're building will give you the best chance to get that ball to the target every time. So you take out, you sort of take away that that unknown when you get a fitting. If you know your clubs are right for you and that you've had them fit and that the shafts are going to kick at the right time and they're the right weight, they can help you improve your game by a percentage that is sometimes difficult to nail down, but it certainly builds confidence, it builds the feel that you need, and it gives you that extra, I guess, that extra little leeway to say, you know what, my clubs I know are working for me and not against me. And that's a big thing, you know, because if you're uncertain about what you're playing or you just go, man, I don't know that these are the right fit, any of that doubt that creeps in or a shot that leaks out a little funny direction once in a while and you're going, man, I just don't know. Is that the golf club or is that me? Or, you know, there's a lot to be said for having those clubs fit for you so that you're confident that they're helping you and not hurting you.
And I know we addressed last time, but having something with a lie angle that did not match by a couple of degrees could hugely change the ball flight for an amateur golfer.
Oh, absolutely. And I would say that with the swing issues that we look at most of the time, you know, the over-the-top golf swing, the lie angles can get off pretty bad, even for a person who's a normal height. You know, a six-foot guy with normal length arms who's swinging way over the top and lifting up out of his posture and flipping it can drastically have clubs that are detracting from his game. However, sometimes, depending on what that client wants, you know, the other distinction that the listeners need to make is, am I going to work at my game hard enough? And I think your listeners probably are more along those lines than, you know, the weekend warrior who plays a couple times a month and goes, you know what, I'm not going to practice that much. I just want to put a club in my hands that'll work better. Then I would say for that guy, I would get him a more upright club or a little longer club and let it start to help overcome some of those swing flaws. With the person who's going to work on their game, I almost want to put them into the right golf club, the one that I know will be correct for them, and help the swing develop into a way that it can use that club. So, you know, sometimes they go to a club that's upright and long because that's what the fitting said, but then their swing never changes because they learn to use that golf club, and it just will never get better, if that makes sense.
It does. Now, the last question we have is from another reader, was generally speaking, if there was only one training aid that you could recommend for a mid-handicap golfer, what would it be?
That's a good question. There are a lot of good ones out there and a lot of bad ones out there. Ones that I have seen, I might mention a couple, but I think the one that I like probably the best for almost all golfers is the Swing Guide, the Swing GYDE Guide, because it does a really good job of teaching wrist hinge in the backswing and release of the arms on the through swing. So it's sort of killing two birds with one stone, and it's a very simple device that is very intuitive and easy to use. So that would probably be one of my favorites that just tends to work well for a lot of people. If they have a decent backswing, something like the inside approach or a, you know, just going to Home Depot and rigging yourself up a little couple pieces of PVC pipe and a foam pool noodle for $4 or $5 instead of spending the, you know, 80 or 90 on one of those things and putting it in such a position that if you swing over the top, you hit it. And if you swing down correctly, you miss it and can learn to swing inside out. That to me is very helpful for the average player to start to understand the dynamics of the body movements you need to swing down the right way, because and that's why I put in that distinction that if you have a decent backswing, because if you go out and grab an inside approach and just shove it down there how they show you to do on the infomercial, but you have a backswing that has compromised positions, you know, you sway the hips out or you don't get enough shoulder turn or your arms are in a really bad position, you will manipulate your entire downswing to try to get it to go the right way on the way through, and it'll just compound the issues. So training aids like that are very good in certain situations, like extremely good. But to me, the swing guide's great because it teaches the hand and arm movements really well. And those little pool noodles jammed in different areas to create a little obstacle course for you to learn to swing the right direction are also very good and very simple, because they don't always introduce a real mechanical thought. They just sort of get, you know, they're in your eye so that your eye's going, okay, I got to swing a little more this direction to miss this thing. And you sort of naturally learn to make the movement needed to get the ball to go straight. So I like those types of devices. Very simple, very effective, and typically very inexpensive.
Well, I want to thank Steve for answering some reader questions this week. We're going to have to bring you back on because we have about 30 more of great questions that people need to hear about. But for myself and the absence of Golfer Gal, but Steve from Golf Tech coming in to fill in, I want to wish everybody a happy week, and we will be with you guys next week with another fine show. Thanks, everybody. Goodbye.